Greetings. My name is Bill Kladke, and I'd like to welcome you to today's edition of Living in Baltimore. Our guest today is Mr. Todd Brogan from ATU Local 1300, and Todd's here today to talk to us about people's plan for transit in Baltimore, which is a very important thing that affects all of us. So, Todd, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming. I know you are busy. Could you, first of all, for those of our listeners who are unfamiliar, could you tell us a little bit about ATU Local 1300?
Yeah, so ATU stands for the Amalgamated Transit Union, and the ATU internationally represents almost 200,000 transit workers in the U.S. and Canada. Uh-huh. And in Baltimore here, Local 1300 has been around since the 1940s, representing bus and rail operators and mechanics and some other positions, primarily over the last 20 to 30 years in the Maryland Transit Administration.
So you folks should know about transit.
We know a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. What kind of jobs do you folks have in the transit system?
So the majority of our members would be bus operators, the people you see driving up and down the streets of Baltimore and the county every day in MTA buses. We also have train operators, the Metro subway, as well as the light rail. And then, of course, the people you don't see every day, which are the mechanics and the rail technicians and other folks behind the scenes that are keeping the system running.
Yeah, so you, without you folks, there's no system.
That's right.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. What's your background and responsibilities?
I actually am an organizer for the ATU's International Office, which is down in Silver Spring, Maryland. Uh-huh. And I've been working with Local 1300 over the past year, really since Governor Hogan was elected and since the red line got put on the chopping block. We've been working closely to see what this means for transit in Baltimore.
Yeah, what it means for transit in Baltimore. First, how can someone find out more information about ATU Local 1300?
Well, the best way to find information about Local 1300 is to head over to their Facebook page, which is facebook.com/ATU1300. And about the plan that we'll be talking about today, you can head to transitbaltimore.com.
Okay, great. Thank you. Let's talk about the plan. Who, what, where, when, how?
So the people, what we're calling the People's Plan for Baltimore Transit, it came out of a long conversation. As with anything we do in a labor union setting, it starts with our members, with the 2,000-plus people represented by Local 1300 who keep the system moving every day. And what we found was after the cancellation of the red line, which is something the local had supported, people all over the city were wondering what was next. And our members especially, because some of them, you know, that was going to be an extension of the Metro subway and the light rail system. So that meant more jobs for people. But for our folks, it also meant that there'd be big changes to the bus system. Because as you know, after the red line was cut, very shortly after, Governor Hogan and his MTA announced something they're calling Baltimore Link, which is the first reorganization of the bus system in many people's lifetimes. And as we look closer at Baltimore Link, we started to see some serious deficiencies that we think make it less of an investment in transit and more, frankly, of a PR plan that seems to be, hey, I'm going to take out your rail line, but here's some crumbs that you can work with. And when we dove in to the red line or to the Baltimore Link, we found in many cases Baltimore Link actually decreases bus frequency. The whole point of reorganizing a bus system is to increase frequency, to give people faster rides, to give people less stressful rides. And when we looked into it a little bit further, they saw cuts to weekend service. We saw a lot of what we call forced transfers. In transit, when you're trying to make a system more effective for riders, you want to try to give people what they call a one-seat ride. So you walk down to your local bus stop, and it gets you close enough to work to walk there without having to switch in between. And Baltimore Link actually creates a lot of forced transfers. And finally, a lot of really important lines. We looked at the top 20 busiest bus routes in town. A lot of them were either severed, so they're no longer running down some of the corridors and streets they were before, or in some cases, they were cut altogether. Now, I should say MTA is in the process of still working out Baltimore Link. They're on their second draft, possibly moving to their third. So we have seen some things improve here and there, and some things will be better for people overall. But on a whole, in general, Baltimore Link seems to be a really miserable failure of a reorganization.
What this kind of doesn't jibe with reality of by what the governor has said, because the idea was to add, at least what he said, was to that increased assets were going into the bus system.
So they, I guess that depends on your definition of increased assets.
Yeah.
It's a $135 million plan. If you recall, the red line was a $2.9 billion plan.
Yeah, right.
And the governor attacked the red line, saying there was this very expensive tunnel that was going to go under the water, and that was $1 billion, and that was just too costly. That's still, even if you were to eliminate that tunnel and to have, there were many alternatives to continue the red line that he decided not to consider. But even if you took out that money, $135 million is hardly a replacement for the kind of investment that Baltimore was going to see. And we should say that it's not just about spending money on rails and rail cars and buses. It's spending money on the community. When you invest in transit, no matter where you are in America, but especially in Baltimore, you're investing in a lot more than just moving people around. You're investing in places where housing is more possible. You're investing in connecting people to good jobs. You're investing, when you invest a dollar in transit, you produce a lot more than a dollar in economic returns. In places like Cleveland, for example, a city very similar to Baltimore, they built what they call a bus rapid transit system, a very short bus rapid transit system. And for every dollar they spent on it, they estimate that they've received $114 in local economic benefit. So when you cut a $3 billion project like the Red Line and replace it with $135 million, you're not just doing simple addition or subtraction there. You're taking out exponential growth in the community that could come with it, and benefits to housing, benefits to job growth, and benefits to a lot of other things, pride in your neighborhood. So when we dove into our analysis, we did something that the MTA didn't do. Before we put out our plan, we started talking to people. First to our members, the people who know the system best. Then we pulled together other labor leaders, because that's the world we live in. And frankly, a lot of labor leaders represent huge numbers of riders, whether they're state workers or city workers, hospital workers. They use buses to get to work. So we wanted to see what their members were concerned about. And then we also pulled together some different faith groups in town that represent congregations. And we heard a lot there about concerns about Baltimore Link moving bus routes away that currently connects, say, a senior center to Sinai, moving it away two or three blocks to try to make the route more efficient, but in the process, forcing people that already may have mobility issues or riders with disabilities to travel longer distances.
Yeah, how are they going
to
get there?
Exactly. And so we talked to all these people. We also, I should say, talked to red line advocates to say, hey, we're on board with the red line, but all of a sudden we have a complete reorganization of our bus system happening, and we need to make this the best change that we can instead of sort of just saying, oh, we're only interested in this longer-term project. We think you can do both. We think really you have to. Buses in Baltimore carry hundreds of thousands of people every day. And we think with the right plan, what we're calling the People's Plan, you could improve the ride for 154,000 bus riders. And we think that's something worth people fighting for.
Well, and I guess we should remind folks about who takes buses and who's on the system. And I guess that the short answer is a lot of different kinds of folks.
Absolutely. In a city like Baltimore, where you have, you know, deindustrialization and the beginnings of gentrification, buses are still the primary mode of transportation for the working class.
Right.
Be they black or white, whether they work in a service job at a restaurant or at a hospital, or in a lot of cases, a lot of professionals, young professionals, just trying to find a way to get around without the cost of a car. And so, and frankly, transit workers, a lot of transit workers take a bus to get around or a train to get to work. So
that's something we forget a lot, I think.
Exactly.
It's not just somebody who wants things to be better because of their job or job security. It's their transportation too. It's their paycheck too.
You know, if you don't have a school bus, you put your kids on a city bus or a city train. And our members are no different. Their parents are using it to get to social services or clinics or hospitals or other things they might need, and their kids are using it to get to and from school. I mean, we saw last year in April when the uprising happened in Baltimore at Mondawmin Station, a place our members know very, very well. You know, we saw what happened when you shut down a rail line. Right. You have hundreds of kids getting out of school with nowhere to go.
Yeah, a mess.
And so this is not just something that's for, you know, workers to improve their jobs. This is something that's for workers who want the same thing everybody else wants.
So specifically, just give us a couple of specifics in terms of what the People's Plan would do that you've mentioned some basics, mm-hmm. but like, for example, that connection between the bus route and a hospital.
Yeah. So we worked with a firm called BRT Planning International, which has had success from, I think I mentioned Cleveland before. They developed that line to places like Johannesburg, South Africa. They've worked in sort of every environment that you could. And we wanted to get their expertise on actually planning bus routes. So we had them come in and analyze Baltimore Link. And we worked with them to figure out, based on all this feedback we got from our allies and community groups, what would this system look like if it actually worked? So People's Plan, we're calling for a $300 million investment, which is still, for the kinds of improvements we're talking about, an incredibly affordable plan. And in the context of the bigger fight for the Red Line and other things, not a lot of money for this kind of work.
So less than a seventh of the original.
That's correct. So what we're talking about is, in Baltimore, the biggest problem on the bus system, if I pulled up a map and showed you the speed of buses in Baltimore, they are at a crawl. Through the downtown corridor, on North Avenue, on Edmondson, on Central or Broadway, buses do not move at anything that's considered a speedy rate in Baltimore. And so why is that? That's the first question. And the answer is not what a lot of people want to think, which is, you know, a bus driver is, you know, taking his time between stops. He's usually rushing to meet a schedule. But in fact, it's a little downtown congestion. Places like Baltimore and Lafayette are incredibly busy streets. And you'll see there's 800 buses run down those corridors a day. And oftentimes at a crawl. But most importantly, and a lot of people don't understand this, is the boarding process. The process of paying your fare, the process of getting up the steps. Mm-hmm. If you go to, like, say, Utah at Lexington Market, you will see a bus that's supposed to sit there for maybe 30 or 45 seconds, sit there for 2 or 3 minutes. And that happens dozens of times on a bus route. Yeah. So especially if you live out on the further outskirts of the route towards the beginning or end, your ride is getting messed up by something that's happening miles away downtown. So what we're calling for is the following. One, and they're pretty straightforward, give buses signal priority. This means when a bus is approaching a light, there are intelligent systems that know that this is a bus. There's communication between the bus and the lights. Right. And they stay green a little bit longer to allow the bus to get through. The second thing is to dedicate and actually enforce bus lanes that make travel quicker and safer for everyone. You'll see a couple of these painted strips around town that say bus only lane, but there's people double parked. Or, mm-hmm. We want to see true dedicated bus lanes. And there are ways to do this that are more effective than others. A lot of the ones you'll see in town right now are curbside. And that means nothing if you're driving down a street where there's commercial vehicles delivering freight to local businesses or people trying to park. Running bus lanes down the median is much more effective. And the final thing is to eliminate these delays I'm talking about on the actual boarding process. How do you do that? One, when you get on right now, you pay on the bus. We think, and we've seen in other cities, that if you give people an option, something like a Muni meter, a lot better. A lot of people don't like those automated parking meters. But what it would be is at certain high volume bus stops, there'd be a machine that you could actually pay your fare right there before you get on, tap your card or buy a ticket. And then when the bus actually pulls up to the station, you board through every door. There's no need to stand in line.
No need to
pay your fare. Exactly.
That sounds great.
And so you board through every door. You pay your fare before you get on. You eliminate 90% of the delays we're having. And on top of this, especially for people with disabilities, we're talking about level boarding. So the platforms are raised and people can roll right on.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. Could you give us that contact information one more time, please?
Absolutely. The best way to learn more about the People's Plan for Baltimore Transit is to go to transitbaltimore.com.
Okay, great. So transitbaltimore.com, it's a great site. And that plan you were talking about is illustrated by a very easy to understand and thorough plan with lots of graphics and things. So I recommend it highly. And I guess folks, if they want to volunteer, can contact you?
Yes. If you go to transitbaltimore.com, there's a contact piece on the right-hand side where you can put in your name, email, phone number, and that's the best way to let us know you're interested, and we'll get right back to you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I want to thank our guest, Mr. Todd Brogan from ATU Local 1300, who's been here to talk to us about a people's plan for transit in Baltimore. Thank you, Todd.
Thank you.
Keep up your good work for all of us.
You too.
And for Living in Baltimore, I want to thank you for tuning in. Let's try to be a good neighbor out there in all of our neighborhoods, and we'll see you next time.